the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome to Sports Talk on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams, and we have a lot coming your way today. We look forward to being joined by our own Vince Ferrara. That'll be an hour number two of the program. We also will have Mike Keith join us for an hour. That'll be from 5 until 6. Plenty to discuss in regards to the NFL franchise in Nashville, as well as the league itself. Always entertaining when Mike jumps on board. And then we also hope to cover a number of other topics. Last night, Charles Davis was on Vol Calls, along with Vol for Life, Jan Gomes. So if we get to, we'll drop in some words from both of them. But, Jimmy, a lot to get to on this last day of March.
Yeah, we do have a lot to get to. And we'll go ahead and jump to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters Technology. You need people you can trust. So I just got this from the SEC. They have canceled the spring meetings. They're looking for alternative methods to have meetings and conduct the business that they have. I hate it. It's something I've covered every year since 1986, where you have access to football coaches, basketball coaches, men and women, athletic directors, presidents, the commissioner of the league. So they have canceled those meetings that just came down from the SEC offices. Tennessee getting a commit. They get Walker Merrill, the wide receiver out of Brentwood. He's rated the number 6 prospect in the state of Tennessee. Tennessee is one of 7 schools on his list, and he made that decision earlier today. 6'1", 176 pounds. He is friends with Caden Martin. That is a quarterback at Catholic and also the son of T. Martin, the receivers coach, pass game coordinator for Tennessee. Walker Merrill committing to Tennessee, now the 9th commit for the Vols. Also, I was looking at the difficulty of the schedule for Tennessee based on ESPN power ratings, and I'm not a big fan of these power ratings, but anyway, they have got Tennessee at number 19 in the country and favored to go 8-4 this year. The teams that they project them to lose to are the number 3 power-rated team, Oklahoma, number 4, Alabama, number 10, Georgia, number 11, Florida. The two worst teams on the schedule for Tennessee are two of their non-conference opponents. They got Troy rated 110, Charlotte rated 113. Furman's not rated because they are FCS or Division I AA, so they are not rated in that group. A couple of others will point out to you. They got Kentucky at 33, South Carolina at 34, Missouri at 53, Arkansas at 66, Vanderbilt at 81. So that's a look at the schedule for Tennessee according to ESPN and their degree of difficulty. Also, I wanted to touch on this. We talked yesterday about the NCAA coming across with a rule that will allow the seniors in spring sports to get another year. That will allow schools to exceed their scholarship limits in those particular sports, but only for 1 year. So if you're a couple over, which some schools will be in some sports, you got to get back to that number by that next season. Now, what that means is that you may end up having some coaches call some recruits that are incoming and say, hey, I won't have room for you. Or they may be telling some junior players, hey, I've got to stop recruiting you just because of a numbers crunch. Now, in looking at rosters, Tennessee men's tennis, for example, they lose two. They have signed 3. It looks like somehow they're going to be over the limit of 4.5. Exactly how much, I don't know. In softball, there are 3 seniors on scholarship. Tennessee's bringing in 3 scholarship players. And so it looks like Tennessee will be okay with softball, although there's a chance they could end up signing more than just the 3 scholarship players. But they've got to get back to their limit, which is 12. They've got to get back to that for the next season. In softball, by the way, they have 12 scholarships. Baseball, 11.7 scholarships. Tennis 4.5, men's tennis at least. So anyway, those are some of the numbers, but I think it's going to be an interesting juggling match for some of the programs out there in terms of the spring sports and how they're going to manage that. But we will see. I don't think for most schools, in particular Power 5 schools, that it's going to be an issue of finances. It might be for some of the smaller schools to carry or to exceed the limit, especially private small schools, which may require a tuition of $40,000 or so per year. Those might be hit a little bit harder. It may be harder for them to manage the numbers. We'll see. But that's a look at those numbers as we try to do a little research to get an idea of what kind of impact it would have in regard to Tennessee. All right, a few other notes out there. Several players have declared early for the NBA draft. Mississippi State's Reggie Perry, who averaged a double-double last year, he said he's going pro. Georgia forward Rayshon Hammonds is also headed to the NBA, but he's going to test the waters and keep his eligibility. He's going to try to go to camps if they have them and then determine whether or not he's going to stay in the draft or come back. He's kind of going to do like what Admiral Schofield did, and that is just to see where he might be projected. Michigan has a forward, Isaiah Livers, who's going to do the same thing. And then you've got a Baylor redshirt junior named Mikio Teague, who said he's going to turn pro. So we got four of them that said they're headed to the next level. I'm sure that John Calipari appreciates Mississippi State coach Ben Howland. Howland was on a press conference yesterday, and he was talking about Kentucky's players, and he said, man, I think all four of those guys are pros. Ashton Hagans, Emmanuel Quickley, Nick Richards, Tyrese Maxey. Now, none of them had declared yet. It's expected that some will. But none of them said they're going pro. Now, if you're Calipari, you'd probably love to have all or most of them back. But here you got Howland in your conference, in your league, saying, hey, all of those guys are pros. You know, they need to – he didn't say they need to be going pro, but he said they're all pros, and if they turn pro, they would all be drafted. I thought that was interesting for Howland to just throw his opinion in there in regard to that situation. Our thoughts and prayers are with a local person. He's an NBA scout. He's been a scout for many years. He's a scout now for the Pistons. His name is Maury Hanks. He's 62 years old. He has the coronavirus. He's been hospitalized, but he is headed in the right direction. Hopefully he's recovering. He was out covering the Mountain West Conference basketball tournament, contracted the virus, and has been in the hospital here in Knoxville. But hopefully he'll be okay. From what I've told, I don't know him, but from what I'm told, he's a great guy. I read an article on ESPN about him the other day, and so our thoughts and prayers are with Maury Hanks and his family for him, for his recovery. All right, a few other notes out there. The NFL owners are going to vote on a 14-team playoff for 2020. John, you're not a big fan of expanding the playoffs in the NFL, are you?
No, simply for the fact that there's no guarantee that you don't get teams with losing records. I think you only had one team with a winning record last year that didn't make the playoffs. And so I don't think it needs to be expanded, regardless of what the games look like this fall or in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's rare when you see, I think years ago, what the year that Brady got hurt, the Patriots were 11-5, didn't make the playoffs. That's rare. It's correct. More along the lines of an 8-8 teams or 9-7 teams not getting in, but adding another playoff game. It's also kind of odd. You're going to only have the number one seed that's going to draw a bye, not the top two teams getting a bye. So I'm in your camp. I don't really like that either. A few other notes. Todd McShay with ESPN draft analyst. He's got Joe Burrow going number one at quarterback. The other quarterbacks, Tua Tagovailoa at number five. Jordan Love at number six. Justin Herbert at number nine to the Jags. The next quarterback to go is going to be in the second round. Jacob Eason, a Georgia transfer, played at Washington. He's got him as a second-round pick. McShay said, however, that even though he's got Tua going at number five, that he thinks there might be a team that tries to trade up ahead of Miami, which has a number five spot. He thinks if Miami wants to get Tua, they may have to trade up. Now, you got Washington with the number two pick, and they're likely going to take Chase Young. Then you got Detroit. Then you got the Giants. The Giants don't need a quarterback, so Detroit's the one you got to watch for in terms of movement there. I saw this stat on Tua that was pretty impressive. ESPN has been tracking this stat since 2011, but on throws of at least 20 yards, Tua completed 55% of his passes. That is the best mark since ESPN started tracking this in 2011. Now, Tua is going to have an MRI on April the 10th, which they fully expect will clear him in every regard. So that is his hope. That's Tua's hope. Also, McShay with Jordan Love, he caught some criticism from others who don't think Love is that good and will be taken that high. Against ranked opponents, and I think this was last year, Love was 0-4, had a quarterback rating of 36.7%, 4 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. One of those games was against LSU, which blew out Utah State. The flip side argument in Love's behalf is he had a new coach, new coaching staff, and a new set of players surrounding him, and that was one reason he did not have as good a year. Now, this one's pretty interesting. Eric Reed wants a revote of the collective bargaining agreement. It passed by about 60 or so votes. He said it was invalid. He said the language has changed after the vote. This is in regard to Social Security disability benefits. One part of it said that the players would get it if they applied before January the 1st, 2015. Then the language said after January 1st, 2015. The NFL declined comment. The NFL Players Association wants an attorney to review the document. So we've got a little bit of controversy about this and why was this language changed within it. This is not good news, at least not to me. The Chinese Basketball Association is telling players that they will not restart the league as they were expected to, I think maybe this week or at least soon. It's being postponed indefinitely. They said that there are too many asymptomatic carriers, and so they have shut it down. Now, they have been shut down since January. What's also interesting is there are a couple of players that play in the Chinese Basketball League, Jeremy Lin, Lance Stevenson, who had actually flown to China, and they were going to go through the 14-day quarantine and then be eligible to go play. Now, I don't know what their situation is going to be now. Do they fly back to the U.S.? Do they stay in quarantine for 14 days before they fly back? I'm not sure. But China also postponed other group sporting events. Of course, China was on the front end of this. This is where the virus emanated. And, John, it concerns me that if they're shutting it down at this point and not restarting, it makes me wonder if that could have an impact on others in the world, in particular those in the United States, about trying to restart, whether it's the NBA, the NHL, Major League Baseball, whatever sport. I have a concern about that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it bears watching for sure, but I also think that it could also be something that has no impact whatsoever. I do, though, follow your line of thinking and reasoning. That's not the best sign because we were under the impression that they were through to the other side, that it was it was now on the upswing. And when you hear that as a pushback, who knows? Maybe it's just what we've seen the president do and just say, hey, to be safe, let's push it back a little bit further. So it could be all precaution, but I'm like you. I'm not so sure that is I would take that as a negative as opposed to a positive.
Also, Adam Schefter, with an interview with the NFL Players Association medical director Tom Mayer, said that he is optimistic that the NFL will have a season. He does not think they will have off-season workouts and training, but he does think that there's a really good possibility they could start the season, and maybe some of these workouts will be in July, which is when a lot of them typically take shape. I did see this. It was interesting. The only NFL city that hasn't had an outbreak is Green Bay. There was some talk about potentially playing some games. They said games. I don't know if they mean exhibition games, in venues outside of NFL cities. I'm not sure how well that would go over, but that is something that has been mentioned. But at least the medical director of the NFLPA is optimistic they will have a season in the NFL. I certainly hope that he's right. If the NFL is going to have a season, certainly college football, you would think, would as well. The Pac-12 has suspended activities through May the 31st. Now, as far as I know, the SEC has not extended theirs beyond the April 15th date. If they did extend it, I missed it, and I'm sorry, but I have not seen where they've extended it. But the Pac-12 suspending activities through May 31st. Also, I saw one thing here, and I thought it was ridiculous, but anyway, one college football suggestion, I didn't see who made the suggestion, was to move the college football season up and have them play in July, August, and September to avoid a potential second outbreak. Look, we don't even know if they can start in July. We have no idea. I think it's kind of borders on, I don't know, silly to think that you could have a college football season July, August, and September. John, I don't see that one happening at all.
No, and while this has been discussed, I don't know that anybody has given it the rubber stamp of approval that has to do with operating an athletic department, a major conference, anything along those lines. This was something that kind of cropped up. Hey, what do you think about this? I think it's all conjecture because I don't know of one commissioner or AD or coach that has said, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, a couple of other notes. The U.S. Open tennis facility up in New York, it is now going to be a site for 350 hospital beds. They're also preparing 25,000 meal packages per day at that facility. Let's see. Oh, I meant to mention this earlier when I was talking about the NCAA allowing spring sport athletes that extra year. Jay Billis with ESPN said that they should now allow all fresh incoming freshmen to transfer. I'm not sure I'm in on that one. In fact, I don't agree with that. I don't think you can make a blanket statement like that. He also said this, John, and I don't think he's right. You would know this better than me, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. He said that most baseball players pay their own way, that they are not on scholarship. Now, I know that they only get 11.7, and they divvy them up quite a bit. I don't think most baseball players are walk-ons. Do you?
No, but I think the point he's getting is they pay a lot more than any other athlete, because I would say that you're looking at the parents toting the note or the family toting the note for, on average, 50, if not much more, of a percentage. So I do think that they probably pay more than any other athlete, with the exception of tennis and some of the men's sports that also go with partial scholarships. But with 25% being the minimal, I would say that they pay more than anyone else to go to school and play sports.
Yeah, and I would think that. I took that as walk-ons, and I'm like, no, wait a minute, because that when you divvy it up, and I would say because of the numbers, you would have more baseball players that would do that, that would at least pay some of their scholarship. And also with the number of baseball players in other sports, you can get the Hope Scholarship, you can get the Lottery Scholarship, you can get an academic scholarship along the way, which can help pay for that. I know there's softball players that have that situation. So you can defer some of the payment in that regard as well. Just a couple other notes. Tarleton State has hired former Kentucky and former Texas A&M basketball coach Billy Gillespie. And also, in the category of knuckleheads, a boxer by the name of Billy Joe Sanders had his boxing license suspended. He posted a video advising men on how to hit females, female partners during this lockdown. He said it was a silly mistake and that he was not trying to promote domestic violence. Not a very smart thing to do. So his license has been suspended. Another quick note, too, and I had not heard about this show until recently, Tiger King. So this is on Netflix. Shaquille O'Neal defended his appearance on this Netflix show. From my understanding, this show, they actually have learned that there's a lot of mistreatment of animals in this zoo, in this ranch in Oklahoma. He said that he had no idea what was going on, Shaq did, at this Oklahoma ranch. He said he was just a visitor. He was not a business partner. And he stopped visiting when he learned about some of the shenanigans that were going on at this. I've not seen this show. My daughters have. I'm told it's kind of brutal. But anyway, that coming from Shaq. And then Cincinnati Bengals have cut a former first-round draft pick by the name of Dre Kirkpatrick. He came from Alabama. He was with the Bengals for a number of years. He also ended up going from a defensive back to a linebacker, at which point he was pretty productive, but I guess not productive enough. He also suffered some injuries. Dre Kirkpatrick of Alabama cut by Cincinnati. Those are news and notes brought to you by Image Matters.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We invite you to join us today. 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. We've got a lot coming your way today on Sports Talk.
The station where winners listen and listeners win. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Talk rolls on. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. I'm John Wilkerson with Jimmy Hyams.
I didn't hear anything John said, unfortunately, so I can't respond to his question. If he didn't ask a question, I will say this. I was reading an article on Saturday Down South, and they were talking about the most deflating plays for each SEC team during the decade of the 2010s. And the number one play, and he went in alphabetical order, but the number one was Alabama and the kick six against Auburn. I mean, who could forget that play? But when he got to Tennessee, I'm thinking, I wonder what direction he's going to go, because there were several to choose from. And the one he picked for Tennessee as the most deflating play of the 2010s was Felipe Franks' 63-yard pass to Tyree Cleveland when Tennessee did not have a prevent defense. Back in 2017, it was a game that Tennessee played on the road. They outplayed Florida, should have won the ball game. And I think it was 2 years earlier that Tennessee lost on about a 63-yard pass that went to Antonio Callaway on basically a 4th-and-13, one of the last plays of the game. So they got burned on late plays 2 years in a row at Florida. But they picked the Franks to Cleveland play as a deflating play. You also could have taken, one of several plays against Texas A&M when Tennessee lost that game against the Aggies. I think Tennessee had a number of fumbles and some turnovers that cost them, and that was a Tennessee team that got off to a great start, and I think was ranked in the top 10 at the time they lost that one. But it was an interesting read to see some of the most deflating plays. One for Auburn was the touchdown pass the Tigers allowed to Florida State in the final seconds of the national championship game in 2013. You could certainly understand that being among that group. And then at Georgia, they just simply put 2nd-and-26. Well, that was what Alabama needed in overtime after a sack on Tua Tagovailoa, and then Alabama threw a touchdown pass to win that game January of 2018. And then one in Kentucky that I think a lot of people remember. So Kentucky has got Florida beat, and they're trying to end like a 30-game losing streak. And Florida scored they scored twice late. In both cases, there was an uncovered receiver by Florida. Kentucky just let them run free, and Florida was able to connect on those passes to win in 2017. So that was one of them at Kentucky that was considered the most deflating. And then at LSU, and I remember watching this game, they score late, maybe a minute and a half left. Looks like they got Alabama beat. And then against a blitz, Alabama throws a screen pass to T.J. Yeldon for a touchdown, silenced the crowd in Baton Rouge, and Alabama beats LSU in a contest of highly ranked teams. So those are some of the more deflating plays that were mentioned in an article I thought was pretty interesting in Saturday Down South.
Yeah, I don't know how you determine how you pick a winner, quote unquote winner, between what Tennessee experienced in 2017 versus 2015. Both were backbreakers, both were gut punches. I don't know how you could determine that one was worse than the other.
Yeah, both of them were gut punches, no doubt about it. It is hard to distinguish which is worse. I guess Maybe there's an argument. Okay, if it happens one time, that's a fluke. If it happens a second time, maybe that's a double gut punch. I don't know. But both of them were difficult for Tennessee. And Tennessee had both those games. Should have won both of them and let mm-hmm. them slip away the way they did. And it's just kind of unfathomable to me that if you go back to 2015 forward, Tennessee has only beaten Florida once, and that's when Tennessee overcame a 21-0 deficit in the first half to beat the Gators. They've had plenty of chances, plenty of opportunities to win more games against Florida, but for whatever reason, they have not been able to get to the finish line against the Gators.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break. To join us on Sports Talk, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We invite you to join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Vince Ferrara joins us for hour number two of the program. Mike Keith for hour number three, as we look forward to sharing a lot with you this afternoon on Sports Talk.
John, I thought it was interesting. I was looking at Fox Bet, and they had some odds in which they said Tennessee's chances of winning the SEC championship in football were 100-1. What are the odds of Tennessee winning the national championship? The same, 100-1. That, I guess, tells you how much they respect whoever can win the SEC. If you're good enough to do that, by golly, the odds are same for you to win a national championship. By the way, the 100-1 odds to win the SEC, that is seventh among SEC teams, and the national championship is 23rd. There are 23 teams with better odds to win the national championship than Tennessee. As far as winning the SEC, Alabama is the odds-on favorite clearly at 5-6. LSU is 14-5. Georgia 5-1. Florida 6-1. Auburn 15-1. Texas A&M 16-1. Then you drop all the way down to 100-1 for Tennessee and Mississippi State. South Carolina at 125-1. Ole Miss, Missouri, and Kentucky 125-1. 300-1. Vanderbilt, 500-1, Arkansas. And then when you look at the national championship picture around the country, I've never seen odds like this. Clemson, 43-20 odds. I don't know how they came up with that one.
That's crazy.
43 yeah, 43-20. Yeah, never seen that before. This is more
maybe
likely.
Maybe that's the closest score that they'll face in an ACC game.
Yeah, there you go. They're projecting a score. That's right.
Yes.
Ohio State, 4-1 odds. Now, this is another odd one. Alabama, 19-4, which I guess is very close to what, 5-1. Georgia, 10-1. Florida and LSU, 15-1. Oklahoma and Notre Dame, 25-1. Texas, 30-1. And then at 40-1, Auburn and Texas A&M, along with Wisconsin, Oregon, and Southern Cal. So those are some of the odds that have been set by Fox Bet. I thought some of those were kind of interesting. I saw an interesting interview with Sean Payton this morning on ESPN. He talked about his situation, and he's doing fine. He's out of quarantine. He's still keeping his distance from some of the neighbors and so forth. But he also was talking about how things like this can keep life and football in perspective. And then I forgot about this, but he recounted that in 2001, he was an assistant coach for the New York Giants when the two planes flew into the World Trade Center. And he said the New York Giants training facility, as the crow flies, was about 2 miles away. So he had a sort of a bird's eye view of what was going on there. And then, of course, the situation right now with the coronavirus that has impacted him. And much of that, people think, came from the Mardi Gras. But anyway, I thought it was interesting watching that interview with him talking about a variety of things. But then there was a discussion about which teams might benefit most from a shutdown of training camps up until July and which one would be hurt the most. And the teams they said that would be helped the most will be teams like New Orleans, Seattle, Green Bay, Kansas City. Why? because they have proven quarterbacks who are undisputed leaders of their teams, and for the most part, their coaches have been there a number of years, Green Bay the exception to that. Those that might have the biggest challenge will be those that teams that have a new coach, maybe a new quarterback, a new system, and they said that they think the Cowboys could be hurt by this. With Mike McCarthy coming in, and, oh, by the way, they don't have a quarterback that they say is under contract. He's got a franchise tag, but they were talking about how limited he might be in trying to work with others. So that's kind of what we apply to the SEC teams missing spring practice. Those that have coaches that have been there a while and have quarterbacks that have been there a while and they're established wouldn't think it would hurt them as much as an Ole Miss with a new coach in Lane Kiffin, or a Mississippi State with Mike Leach, or an Arkansas with Sam Pittman, or a Missouri with Eli Dirkwitz. You would think that those programs, as they try to install a new system with a new coaching staff, might be impacted a little bit more than those that have coaches and or quarterbacks returning that are proven.
Yeah, I think that's spot on, especially when you take a look at, again, trying to make sure that you have the opportunity to get the playbook in, to get the style of play in, to be able to identify those that are helping the others buy in. There's just so much that you're missing out on right now with no spring practice, especially for those coaches that take over programs. And obviously, it's very rare that you take over a program that doesn't need the extra work, as much work as possible. And I think that's the case with all of the newcomers to the conference this year, that there were reasons that they made changes, and it wasn't because somebody took a better job somewhere else.
Yeah, it's rare when you have a situation, and we'll go back many, many years, but Butch Davis leaves the Miami Hurricanes in great shape to go take an NFL job. And then Larry Coker comes into a phenomenal situation. Les Miles, the same thing, going to LSU from Oklahoma State. Nick Saban left the LSU program in great shape when he went to the NFL. So you don't see programs that are just built in. Well, even when Philip Fulmer took over Tennessee was in great shape, had plenty of talent. And there wasn't any rebuilding to do. It was only building on what was already there. So it's rare when you do see a situation where a coach takes over and it's a ready-made situation for success. But anyway, it'll be interesting to see what those programs do at Mississippi State, Arkansas, Missouri, when they're kind of behind the eight ball anyway, and then having less practice time with their particular players because we don't have spring training, and then no telling when we might resume with our summer drills.
Yeah, and then you can also look at the succession at Georgia. Mark Richt inherited a pretty good program after they made a change with Jim Donnan, and Kirby Smart, no doubt, inherited a well-stocked cupboard when he took over in Athens. That's kind of been the outlier, hasn't it?
It has been. Mark Richt won 10 games. Well, he wasn't there for the bowl game, but Georgia won 10 games before Kirby Smart went there. That's unusual. Georgia fans weren't happy with Richt, and so – he leaves a cupboard that was well-stocked. And then when Rick went there, Donnan, and I may be slightly off, but Donnan typically was an 8-4 coach who won bowl games. He just wasn't good enough to beat Tennessee and Florida. Mm-hmm. That was his problem. And so he beat most everybody else. He had some nice teams. And Mark Rick went there, and he inherited a really good situation at Georgia. So, yeah, it's that's rare to find that. Most times you're going in and you're trying to rebuild something. What I was kind of, as we were talking, I was kind of reminded of this old quote from Lou Holtz years ago. So he went to South Carolina in the second year. I think they won 9 games. And somebody said, well, yeah, but you won them with the previous coach's players. He said, well, the year before we went 8-11 with his players too. So,
yeah.
And throwing that back at a reporter that asked him that, which is true. But, anyway, it's the thing to me, I'll be really curious to see how those SEC teams do. I have trouble seeing those 4 SEC teams that have new coaches being much better than they were just because they don't have the time to install their system. And then you wonder, are they going to be much improved at midseason, or is this going to be something that's going to be hard for them to really get this thing turned around at all, given the fact that they just don't have that much practice time to install their system and get ready for 2020?
Yeah, what do you think? You know, the SEC and several other conferences have now gotten in lockstep, and that is you can do the virtual coaching and or meetings and all of those things. I just wonder exactly what that accomplishes. I mean, you can certainly talk as much as you want to make sure that they comprehend exactly what their responsibilities are one meeting room to the next. But until you get out there and actually do it, execute it, I just think that it can only do so much with what they have relaxed the rules on as far as being able to talk, communicate, and work with your team this way.
I think you're right. And what's interesting, I think some players, some people in general, learn in different ways. Some people learn just as much by watching a video. Some people learn a whole lot better by doing it, by getting out there on a practice field and going through the physical reps, not just looking at it. So, but I do think that, oh, and what's also interesting about what you're saying, I don't know what the Big 12 did, but Lincoln Riley the other day was bothered by other conferences that were able to do this, and I don't know if they cleared the way for the Big 12 or not, but the Big 12 was not allowing that. And he said that's not a level playing field. He wanted that to be allowed in the Big 12. Maybe they have adjusted that. I haven't seen it, but I know that was one thing he was concerned about.
Maybe they don't have Wi-Fi in Lubbock, right?
There you go. Why should they?
I kid the Lubbockians. We'll get a break. A final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk is coming up. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free. For AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers, the toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. With Jimmy Hyams, I'm John Wilkerson. This is Sports Talk on 99.1, the Sports Animal.
We work all day under a neon Budweiser sign. Yeah, it's a really cool thing. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, we are Sports Radio WNML.
Final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900, star 990 is free. For AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers, the toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. Jimmy, when you were talking earlier about how it was who was the coach that was speaking so highly of John Calipari's players?
Ben Howland, Mississippi
Ben
State.
Howland. Yes. So he was the one that was saying, hey, look at there all these great pros. So what he was doing, it was the opposite of what Roderick Rhodes' experience was when Rick Pitino could not push him out the door fast enough in Lexington, where he eventually wound up finishing at USC, right?
Yeah, because Rhodes had indicated he might want to turn pro, and Pitino said, okay, great. And then Rhodes said, well, no, I want to return. He said, no, you need to go pro.
Yeah.
So he ended up going to Southern Cal. And, in fact, I think it took him a little while to find a home before he wound up as a Trojan. So,
that was
pretty interesting, yeah, to see where Calipari was inviting him to just go somewhere else. Yeah. So, good memory.
Oh, no, you're a pro. That was what you're going to be awesome. They're lining up to draft you. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. Well, we've seen Cole Anthony at North Carolina say he was delaying his decision, and I don't know what the Kentucky players are contemplating at this point. They don't really have to make a decision right now, right? It's not
correct.
Like they've got some NBA camp that they're going to go to. It's not like the Chicago deal or the any other combine is set up at this point. Plus, the draft is supposed to be on or around June the 25th. And there's some talk that there's no way they can hold the draft in, because if the season is ongoing, you don't know the order of the draft. You don't know, and typically during the draft you have trades. You can't conduct trades when you're doing the draft right in the middle of the season. You can't, because while the season's ongoing, trades aren't allowed. So there's a strong possibility that the NBA draft is going to be moved off the June 25th date.
Yeah, I just don't see how they could stick to it. As you talked about, you don't even know how much of the season is going to be going on, exactly where the season will hang in the balance at that point. It's far different from what the, I think, relatively easy call for the NFL to make, as well as the WNBA, which their draft is coming up in just a couple of weeks. But, yeah, for the NBA, everything's predicated on the league being past the season, and I don't think there's any way that will be the case unless there is no end to the season, which nobody's pulling for.
Yeah, and that's the thing that's so hard to project at this point. And maybe that's a reason that the Kentucky players are holding back, because they don't know what the future holds. Nobody does for sure. And so you might want to wait till the last minute before you make a decision on what you're going to do. But it is, you know, it's hard. There's not a perfect answer to many of these things out there right now. It's just really hard to get a grasp of it, and just no way to know what's going to happen. We talked about the discouraging news coming out of China in basketball. Now you got the NFLPA medical guy saying that he's confident we'll have the NFL season. If we have the NFL season, hopefully that we can resume with the NBA and the NHL so that they can play their seasons. We'll see.
That we will. And be interesting to get Vince's take on what has been obviously a lot of momentum for Tennessee on the recruiting trail. For the Volunteers, they pick up a running back yesterday, a wide receiver today. Mm-hmm. It really has been a very productive week for Jeremy Pruitt and company as they continue to build that 21 class. Excuse me. Yeah, the 21 class.
Yeah, and then the walk-on linebacker from Philadelphia as well. So, yeah, they are doing pretty well at this point. I have a lot of confidence in the staff. I think that this staff does very well in recruiting. I think they did a really good job in evaluating from last season. I think one of the strengths of Jeremy Pruitt is his ability to evaluate. And we have seen a number of times where they're out there making an offer to somebody, and it's one of the first offers, and people are looking around and like, well, wait a minute, why are they offering this guy? And the next thing you know, 10, 12, 15 other big schools are making an offer too, which tells me Tennessee's doing a pretty good job getting on the front end of these evaluations.
Yeah, and when you take a look at, there is a young man down in Alabama. He's a 3-star defensive lineman, but as you talk about, look at who else is offering, Anquan Barnes. He's got Tennessee in his final six, along with Nebraska, Georgia, Florida, Auburn, and Alabama. Tennessee was the very first to offer him, and a lot of times, Jimmy, that can go a long way with a young man.
Well, it can. A lot of times they'll sit back and they'll say, hey, this school was the first one on me, and they get a sense of loyalty about that. And that's a card that Tennessee can play in an effort to try to get them. And the flip side of that was, you remember when Pruitt was here his first year, they were not the first to offer a lot of in-state players, right? And so a lot of these in-state players went elsewhere. And so I think there can be a correlation between a player picking your school and you being the first one to offer them.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Hour number one of Sports Talk in the rearview mirror. Hour number two with our own Vince Ferrara is next on 99.1 The Sports Animal.